Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast exists because of the fine folks at patreon.com/DaveChen. A big thanks to those at patreon.com/DaveChen, and be sure to sign up there for bonus audio content and support Decoding Westworld. Thanks so much.
You and your friends in the cartel, or whatever the fuck you're calling yourselves these days, sell me this lump of concrete today. Or you give it to me for nothing. Tomorrow.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Decoding Westworld, an unofficial podcast about the HBO original series Westworld. I am David Chen.
I'm Sinhan Badlakar.
Welcome to the podcast / YouTube show. Every week, what we're going to do is we're going to be discussing each week's episode of Westworld. We're going to be talking about what exactly happened there. We're going to be talking about our theories. We're going to talk about like what happened to each character, speculate wildly on the future, probably put out some just plain wrong stuff about what's going on in the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. So we will spoil each week's episode, but we will not spoil anything from the next time on previews. This week, we're going to be discussing Season 4, Episode 1, entitled The Auguries. Season 4, Episode 1, The Auguries. That is what we are going to be recapping here today on the podcast. It's been a couple years since Westworld has come out. We're going to start by just reacting overall to the episode. All right? So before we dive into what happened here, what's going on, Siddhanth, what did you think of the episode overall? What was your experience of watching it like?
I was surprised by how much I liked it, and that is a backhanded compliment, absolutely. But I was pleasantly taken in by it from an emotional standpoint, which means any issues I had last season or even this episode that had to do with mysteries and logic and answers slowly faded away by the end of the episode. I feel like we're on for what feels like a semi-new ride, and I'm interested to see where it takes us.
When the episode started, I put on my Instagram story, I'm ready to be hurt again. I'm ready to be hurt again by Westworld. And that is how I feel. Now, here's the thing, Siddhanth. I would argue that Westworld has been excellent at season premieres. Mm-hmm. And probably mostly terrible at season finales, right? Like virtually every season premiere that has occurred has been really strong. And this one was no exception. This was an excellent season premiere. It addressed some things that we wanted to know about what happened from last season. It introduced like brand new ideas. And there's just a bunch of stuff that we literally don't even know what's happening. So it's a classic Westworld episode. But I'm also... while my heart wants to love again, I have the protective shielding up. You know, I'm worried about how it's going to unfold, because I have a feeling at some point it's going to go off the rails. I've read some headlines from reviews of people who have watched more episodes, and they seem to think that the show is just as dense as in previous seasons, which to me is not a good sign. Mm-hmm. I think it's had too many plot lines in the past, and I think it needs to simplify it down and just nail a handful of good ideas. So I thought it was a great episode, and I'm worried about the future. So that's kind of my reaction.
I agree. As always, I'm cautiously optimistic. And granted, season after season, the caution tends to overtake the optimism. But isolated from all that, I'm happy with it as a singular episode. That's for sure.
Agreed. Okay. Well, let's talk about what exactly happened in this episode. Before I get to that, I do want to mention you can find episodes of this as a podcast at decodingwestworld.com, our conversations, and also email us at decodingwestworld@gmail.com. Of course, you can also, if you're watching this on video, you can leave a comment below, and we'll try to get to some comments in either the next episode or some of the bonus content we're putting out on my Patreon page. This episode, The Auguries, was directed by Richard J. Lewis and written by Lisa Joy and Will Sudeik. The Auguries, interesting word, right? Sadan, what do you make of the augury? Let's define what an augury is, right? What is your sense of why this was titled Auguries?
Sure. In the modern simplified sense, it can mean an omen. It can also mean the interpretation of an omen. And it comes from the ancient Roman tradition of divining the future from birds. And so before we even watch the episode, I have to wonder, are we, as the audience, are we the augurers? Are we the ones trying to pick apart what's going to happen in the future? And there may be a more episode-centric explanation as well regarding certain things we find out about a returning question mark character. But I just found it funny how, you know, it almost seemed, the title almost seems like a shout out to those of us who are going to be, you know, furiously theorizing after each episode is.
Indeed. What is being augured and, you know, who is doing the auguring is the question. But it does seem like, as with most seasons, the season will get pretty dark, is my guess, right? We're going to go to some dark places if we are to interpret the title of episode one seriously. Okay, here's what I think we should do in terms of covering this episode. I think we should talk about this opening sequence, right? And like what that all means, all right? What is the through line of that whole situation? We open with the Hoover Dam long in the future, right? Conveniently, William, a.k.a. the Man in Black, a.k.a. the host of the Man in Black, is there? Host version of Man in Black?
Now, probably. When
we last left the Man in Black in season three, Charloris had created a host version, like Charlotte Hale with Dolores's mind inside of her, had created a host version of the Man in Black, who then attacked the original William / Man in Black and slit him in the throat. Presumably he's dead, but maybe not. We never saw him actually die. I think it is safe to assume that this one that we saw is the host version, probably, because he doesn't have a huge throat slit, is my guess, but who knows?
Or that other scar on his face.
Exactly. So he shows up at the Hoover Dam to make a purchase, right? And it is conveniently explained that the Hoover Dam hasn't changed a bit since he was young. So that's why it looks suspiciously similar to what the Hoover Dam looks like today, right? And he makes an offer to buy what is being stored at the Hoover Dam, which we learn quickly are like a bunch of servers / data, data that is designed to last for 100+ years. And my sense of what this is, right, is we learn from the person who's kind of part of the cartel, as it were, that they have been storing this data that was beamed to them 8 years ago. So I think it's safe to assume, correct me if I'm wrong, Sadanth, that at the end of season two, Dolores beams the Sublime and a bunch of host data to an unknown location. Mm-hmm. We basically have season three was basically about Serac, played by Vincent Cassell, trying to find that data, was unsuccessful. And now I think this is it. This is the location of the data. Like, it is being stored here. And presumably Dolores or someone else working on Dolores' behalf paid these people a bunch of money to store this data for the past 8 years. That was my interpretation of what happened. What do you think?
I'm not entirely sure, just because they are being quite mysterious about it. And usually when the show is mysterious about something, it's safe to assume that some kind of reveal is afoot.
You didn't think the fly hosts were enough of a reveal? Like, I feel like, you know, there's enough mysteries going on, even with the understanding that I just explained.
Dave, sorry, did you suggest that there's only going to be one reveal per plotline?
It's true. That was terrible miscalculation on my part.
No, I think you're right in terms of, you know, divining or auguring what's going to happen. You're probably right, but it's one of those things where they talk around it so much that I guess it remains to be seen because, you know, when those pieces are eventually put into place, we're going to look back at this scene as, you know, on one hand, you know, a plot setup, sure. But on the other hand, something that introduces us to, like you said, this bizarre, creepy new concept of these presumably host flies. And I'm very curious about how they work.
Yeah. I'm guessing there's some kind of nanotechnology in there, but you know, William makes the offer. He's like, you can sell me this stuff today, or I will take it, you know, for free tomorrow. And he kind of gives them an offer. And of course they decline, because how could William possibly be a threat to them? They don't know that William has host fly things that can control people's bodies or something like that.
Control, reprogram. We don't know. I guess we'll find out.
Yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, you were saying, like, are these hosts potentially, right, like, mm-hmm. that are being controlled? Who knows? I think it's likely that it's the Sublime / host Data, is my mm-hmm. guess. Like, that's because he says 8 years ago is when it happened, which would, yeah. according to what we learned from the timeline, that would put it right around the events of season two, right? Yeah. So I think that's what it is that's being discussed here. I that's the one thing I thought I was sure of until I talked to you, but your skepticism... Your skepticism is deeply warranted and fair, okay? So I thought this whole sequence was, like, awesome, like, very creepy. And you see the guy, the gentleman who's played by Arturo Del Puerto, I think is his name, right?
Mm-hmm.
You see his home is so, like, meticulous, and he's got, like, all these watches in this display case, and he's really well put together. And then when he gets home after meeting with the man in black, there's, like, flies. And, like, the flies are such a... visceral disruption of this order that he's created for himself that it's actually mm-hmm. kind of upsetting. And then of course when he starts killing his coworkers, he seems to be doing so in a very tortured fashion. Like it doesn't, he's not like a robot, like, you know, bleep warp, I'm killing people. It's like, it's very, it seems like he's being tormented as he's doing what okay. he doesn't want to do. Yeah. Anything else about this opening sequence?
More bleep blurb, unconflicted. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
About the opening sequence. Yeah. The fact that, you know, I'm just always creeped out when you have a whole bunch of flies and you can hear them. And to me, it's this symbol of rot and death. And so I'm really wondering, you know, how, you know, what the explanation is going to be and how they're going to play into all this thematically as well.
Indeed. Indeed. Okay. Let's talk about Maeve and Caleb's storyline. And both of which intersect. So they're the only two stories, I think, that we know for sure are taking place in the same time frame in this episode, right? And then we'll get to, obviously, the Christina or Christoris or Dolores storyline after that. But we meet Maeve. She's meditating in a cabin, listening to radio. She kind of has like a... an overload that like shorts out the entire grid. Mm-hmm. It's unclear what she's doing. She's remembering her daughter. Certainly that's one thing she's doing, right? Something that she's been doing for the last like four seasons.
Yep.
three seasons, I should say, but unclear exactly what's going on here. Yeah. I didn't know if you had any interpretations of like what Maeve was doing there.
No. And that's one of those weird things where I'm not actually sure if we're meant to be guessing anything. Like mm-hmm. usually when the show is mysterious, you can pretty easily say, oh, okay, I guess we're going to find out more about that. But this, I'm not entirely sure yet. I think it's...
She was just reminiscing and then she reminisced too hard. She reminisced too hard, basically, is what happened, right?
Basically, the plot function it serves is that it not only very quickly catches us up, on Maeve's character and what she's been through and, you know, the end of season three, but also some things that happen after season three and between seasons three and four, presumably. Who knows how they'll, you know, play with the timeline, if at all. But I think what we're meant to assume is that she is recalling things in the past, everything that leads up to the season three finale with her and Caleb on that bridge, you know, the Not Fight Club sequence. And then we see...
flashbacks flash forwards question mark, because it looks like they are kind of infiltrating a facility that contains one of those big controlling balls, for lack of a better word, right?
Yeah.
We saw them in the previous season. There was Rehoboam, there was Solomon.
I'm going to call this one David.
There's another one called David, right?
No, I'm going to call this one David.
You're going to call it David. Okay. I think it was... It looked like it was the one, like one of the prototype, like one of the first versions of it, right? That we saw in season three. And then we see Caleb apparently be grievously wounded, right? Like he seemed grievously injured in that scene. And so I thought, oh, Caleb died after season three, and like we're never going to see him again. But then he shows up breathing comfortably in the next scene, right? So do we think that this adventure with them infiltrating the base happened in between seasons three and four, or is it like a clairvoyant future memory?
Well, Dave, the language it's using, it is the language of a flashback.
It is.
Right? But this is Westworld we're talking about. You know, look at the title of the episode. Look at what it implies. Look at the fact that we don't know what Maeve is doing alone in her cabin. So, again, like I said, in isolation, yeah, it's a flashback. If you take into consideration the fact that this is the most topsy-turvy show, you know, for better or worse, that we've seen on television in a while, I guess we'll find out.
I will say it was really refreshing to just see Maeve acting on her own behalf. Like, that was something we talked about in the last episode of Decoding Westworld, was that Maeve was basically at the beck and call of Serac all last season. And it was nice to see Maeve, like, making her own decisions, you know? And to see Tandy Wei Newton kind of kicking ass again. So she figures out that people are after her because they've recognized this short, this grid short, you know, power thing that's happened. And then people come to her house and they just start freaking opening fire on her, you know, not even like waiting. And she is able to take them out in a rather badass fashion. And she identifies one of them as Colonel Brigham. So this is a guy that was actually in the show before, right?
Yes, he was a general of sorts in the park, in the Westworld park. So either this is the same model or, you know, some kind of recreation of that model, because he clearly doesn't recognize the name Colonel Brigham.
Yeah, right.
But she recognizes him.
And she kind of takes them all and kind of hooks her brain into his brain to see like what he's been experiencing. And I have to say that whole sequence was like super cool. Like, it felt like Minority Report, where she's like looking at the world from this other guy's perspective. And the part where she like murders the guy, you know, kills all those guys, I thought was pretty badass too. It's interesting. This is the second thing starring Tandy Wei Newton that I've seen where she's in the middle of a forest, like in the middle of like wintry woods, taking out random dudes. The other one being the Julian Higgins movie God's Country that premiered at Sundance this year. Extremely similar kind of aesthetic to what happened in this scene. Both of which star Tandy Wei Newton. So anyway, yeah. She has a action aesthetic that she prefers, I guess. But
she's being typecast.
Yeah, and so I thought the whole like viewing the world, like viewing that guy's memories, was like so cool. I really love that.
I love that she sees herself through his eyes,
yes,
as a vicious killer, and then smiles. What an amazing detail!
Yeah, oh, love it. So, and then I think at that point she leaves to go help Caleb. Right? Is anything else about her storyline that we should mention, or?
No, just at the end of that scene, she discovers that this Colonel Brigham character was sent apparently by William, who she may not know is, you know, a host himself. But I do love what she does at the very end. She sets her cabin on fire in order to, you know, presumably make sure there's no trace of her. But I just love that shot of her heading out, because even though the fire looks incredibly cheap and incredibly fake, it doesn't matter, because you have Colonel Brigham's severed head in soft focus, just kind of he's dead, but he's like kind of watching her leave, and the fire is reflecting in his eyes, and it was such a delightfully staged shot.
Yeah, it was pretty good, you know. And there's a bunch of good shots in this episode, some of which feature the next character we're going to be discussing, Caleb Nichols, played by Aaron Paul. So I think you and I were both expecting, Siddhant, that Caleb would be enjoying his position as leader of the rebellion.
Oh, well.
And it seems like everything has just gone back to normal. And like, I will say that I think there is like a really potentially interesting point being made here about how moments that feel like they are revolutionary in our history can often lead to a society that reverts back to the mean, you know, like that reverts back to what people already know. It's been 7 years after the events of season three, we learn, right? And Caleb is still working in construction, and people don't even seem to, like, his coworker doesn't even seem to know that he was supposed to be the head of the rebellion in any way. Like, it's not like, oh, remember that thing you did, Caleb, 7 years ago? It's like, there's no recognition at all that Caleb was important at all in any of those events, is my sense, right?
It was such a depressing reintroduction to Caleb that I swear to you, I laughed out loud, out of sheer enjoyment. Because again, like we spoke about, I was expecting, you know, this to be like, oh, society's crumbled, it's a Mad Max world, and Caleb is a reluctant leader. But no, he's just back to square one, and this conversation is unfolding where he's working construction again. And you see what looks like a Pepsi logo in the background. Clearly, you know, capitalism has won. And it is so grim, the fact that he went through all the things that he did and nothing changed. And, you know, it really brings to mind, you know, how, you know, we all feel about, you know, we can feel about, you know, politics in America sometimes, that, you know, you can try and, you know, upset the system in certain ways, but things keep reverting back to, you know, an unpleasant status quo because the powers that be have such a hold on things.
Caleb's coworker says that said, quote, that insight machine didn't tell us who we could be. It told us who we already were. And then he asks, has your life changed since they destroyed the machines? You know, like, and the answer being the implication being no. Right. So they apparently did destroy the machine. So like Rehoboam is no longer dictating people's actions, but very little else has changed. It's also weird too, because the marketing around the season, like, I think it was when I watched it on HBO Max, it was like a new world begins or something like that. And so it's like, oh, okay. Like after the rebellion from season three, but pretty bold of them to just basically say all that stuff that happened in season three, we're pressing the reset button. It's not the kind of story that we want to tell. And I'm like, okay, I respect that you're willing to make big moves to kind of tell the story that you want to tell. And hopefully, you know, it will be a good one. So
I kind of love it, and I kind of like that they don't use some kind of cackling villain like a Loki type to be like, oh, well, what people really want is control. We just have Caleb's coworker saying, no, you know, I kind of preferred when, you know, the AI was telling me what my life was. And he finds a sense of comfort in that.
Yeah. We find out that Caleb is married. To a lovely woman, and has a 7-year-old daughter named Frankie, who he is teaching how to use guns. And what's fascinating to me is like imagining what the story that must be between these people was. Like, he led a rebellion, but she doesn't seem to take it seriously at all, right? Like, his wife doesn't seem to be like, oh, we must protect this precious cargo. The previous leader, like the John Connor of Westworld, like she does not give a crap about any of that. She's like, stop telling our kids how to play with guns. Basically, her character, I have to say, is pretty rough. Like it is this kind of common trope we've seen in shows like Breaking Bad, where there's a male protagonist who's like trying to push the action of the show forward. And then his wife is just like, no, don't go do the brave thing. And it's pretty rough so far. I hope they give her more to do as the show continues.
Fair enough. I do like their relationship, but yeah, no, that's a fair point as well. As a Westworld watcher for, you know, how many ever years the show has been on, I got to say, there were things where, you know, I picked up details that made me think, wait a second, is what we're witnessing even real? Is the daughter real? Is the wife real? Is Caleb alive? And what's so annoying is that nothing in the show, nothing in the language of the show, the visual language, the filmmaking, the narrative framing, would necessarily lead us to believe anything like that.
Yes.
But the show has at the same time trained us to subconsciously question everything.
Question the nature of your reality. Have you ever questioned the nature of reality? Exactly. I think it's completely fair. It's, and especially because we saw a flashback question mark of Caleb dying earlier. Like, maybe Caleb's brain is being kept alive in a vat somewhere, and Maeve is interacting with him by like interfacing with whatever network he's in. You know, like, who knows? But fair enough. You're right that maybe none of this is true. I think of the plot lines we've seen, right? Christina / Dolores, Maeve, Caleb, you know, old man, like Man in Black. Like, I think at least one of those plot lines is definitely not what it seems, right? Like,
yeah, probably
at least. So,
yeah. The reason I thought this is because, you know, all of this happened 7 years ago, and their daughter is apparently 7 or turning 7. So, did they Did they happen to meet before the riots began or slightly after? Who knows? Maybe it's just, I don't normally think like this about any show.
Except Westworld has completely destroyed your brain is kind of what you're trying to say.
Basically. You know? And there's also like this Banksy-like mural of a little girl flying a drone, but the girl is being controlled by another robot. And so you have these things that could be interpreted as clues as to like, you know, who's really in charge here, who's in control. But it is a nice aesthetic.
Super cool Banksy-esque art, though. I love that. That was awesome. Mm-hmm. So we later find out, like, Caleb is reading to his daughter, and they have a nice little interaction, and he's really paranoid. The daughter loses her teddy bear outside of her room, and then there is a guy who's there to I think it's a host, right? Because hosts were sent after Maeve as well, to shoot his daughter, Caleb, whoever, and then Maeve kills him with a katana. Badass. Pretty badass kill. Yeah. You wrote in the show notes, she's still super cool. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. So they interact, and then Caleb's like, you know, I got to go figure out who's trying to kill us, or else we'll never know peace. And his wife is like, no, don't go do that. Our best plan is just sit here and do nothing, you know, I guess. but then, you know, Maeve and Caleb team up again, and they're going to go and figure out what exactly is going on. There's a senator in California that might have some answers. That's kind of their mission for this episode. Any other thoughts on the Maeve-Caleb storyline here?
As I recall, in season 3, they didn't interact all that much, right? Except maybe towards the very end?
Correct.
Yeah, but the way they interact here, it really gives you the sense that they had a genuine dynamic relationship maybe after season 3 ended. So even though we don't see all that, even though at times I felt like, hold on, where did season 4 go? Are we already on season 5? It really like fleshed out the performances and interactions really flesh out the history between the two of them.
Great call out. Yeah, I like the relation. I like the dynamic between them right now. You know, like it's like, oh, these are kind of like friends who like respect each other and like, you know, and it's cool to be able to see Maeve bounce off of somebody who is not controlling her every move. You know, somebody who is like Maeve considers an equal. I think that's interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right, before we get to the rest of the episode, let's give a quick plug for other stuff we're working on. Sidon, if people are enjoying this scintillating dialogue, where else can they find your work on the internet?
Sure, I share all of my work on my Twitter, which is just my name, at Siddhant Adlakha. And the one thing I'd like to plug is not actually something new or upcoming. It's a review from last year for the movie West Side Story. And the reason I want to share it is because Ariana DeBose happens to be in that movie. And she has just been introduced in Westworld as well. And I love her. And I think she's maybe the best original Hamilton cast member.
Excellent. Well, check that out. I think you also won an award, partially an LA Press Club award, partially because of that review. Is that right, Sidon?
Yes, it was one of the samples that was sent in. This was the Southern California Journalism Awards, which happened just a couple of days ago, the 64th edition. So that was one of the three reviews they judged on.
Congratulations. Siddhanth is extremely good at what he does.
Oh, thank
we are
you.
Blessed. Thank you. We are blessed to have Siddhanth's expertise here to cover Westworld with us here. I'll give a quick shout out to Culturally Relevant, which is a podcast I do at culturallyrelevantshow.com. I've actually interviewed Siddhanth before on that podcast. I also have an interview with the journalist Elizabeth Williamson, who's just written an amazing book about misinformation in the modern age called Sandy Hook. Check it out at culturallyrelevantshow.com.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Okay, Siddhanth, You know, before we get to the Christina Dolores plotline, there's a couple other things I thought we should mention, actually.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is we got a brand new title sequence for this season, right?
We did.
Brand new title, which is kind of cool. It's kind of cool. I admire any show that has like a new title sequence per season, because those are hard to make. You know, they take a lot of work. And these are thematically interesting, right? Mm-hmm. The Westworld title sequences are thematically interesting. We saw that as like it got out of the park, like the title sequence changed. This season, there's a lot of imagery around flies, which mm-hmm. are obviously going to play a major role this season. And then there is an image of like a very vivid image of like people in these kind of prison-like cells.
Yeah.
That were on fire. That was like very upsetting. Do you have any theory right now about what the flies are, by the way? Like, what's your current standing theory about the flies?
Obviously some kind of robotic entities, some kind of, I don't want to say nanotechnology because they're too big to be nanotech, but
like, why would you use flies if they were nanotech? You know,
it doesn't like this. Yeah. And if you have nanotechnology, why not use nanotech? So
clearly why not just like, in, you know, you like touch, you shake their hand and like the nanotech goes in their hand. Like you don't need flies to like,
and
do,
I think that's also really aesthetically interesting because clearly, you know, whoever is behind these flies really wants to make a point of scaring the crap out of whoever he sets them on or he or she sets them on.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a significant likelihood that we're looking at William, the host version of William, who mm-hmm. is acting under the auspices of Charloris, like the Charlotte mm-hmm. Hale version of Dolores, right? That's mm-hmm. kind of what I think is most likely. But like, yeah, what are the flies? Like, why are they using flies specifically? Like, those are all unanswered questions for now.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about the biggest surprise of the episode. Not surprise. I think we all saw it coming, but the biggest mystery is Christina.
Yeah.
We see Dolores wake up, Evan Rachel Wood, but she's not, seemingly not a host anymore. She seems to be like a human. The shot, I think, of her waking up is very similar to the shot, the very first shot of the show where she wakes up as Dolores, if I'm not mm-hmm. mistaken. Or, And she's in a futuristic apartment, which is super cool. She's got this bed that folds up, and her name is Christina. And she has a roommate, played by Academy Award-winning actress Ariana DeBose,
mm-hmm.
Who wants her to choose white or black shoes, which is kind of a similar dynamic to picking white or black hat in first season of Westworld.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the episode kind of centers around Christina's job, her dating life, her interactions with her roommate, and we'll highlight a few of these. But I guess I just want to add, let's start by asking you, Siddhant, like, what was your first reaction when you saw Christina? Because I was like, what is happening here? What is going on, right? Like, who is this character? Why do they have Dolores's body?
Yeah, and my first reaction was, just to go off what you said, is this Dolores's body? Is this, you know, the body that we saw when Dolores, quote-unquote, died at the end of last season? But I think, you know, even if that question is answered in a logistical sense, I don't think that's important right now, because this is clearly playing on our relationship to Dolores, our understanding of who she is and her outlook. Because whoever Christina is not Dolores, doesn't have the same history, doesn't have the same ideals, the same perspective, on the surface, at least. Because everything that happens in Christina's storyline is, in a way, to remind you of Dolores. You know, like you said, the black and white shoes, it's a small thing. Maybe there's some, you know, sort of weird game or augmented reality or something going on around her. Or maybe it's nothing. Maybe it is something that she, deep in the recesses of her mind, understands or interprets a particular way, you know, because she's been coded a certain way. And we as the viewers have been coded similarly by the show, programmed by the show to, you know, look into these interactions and try and interpret things from them. So I think that's what's so interesting about this storyline, is that if you show it to someone who's never seen Westworld, you know, it seems fairly simple, straightforward, slightly mysterious. But to us, you know, we've been with this show for years and years and years. It's very eerie and almost unsettling because of every little thing that happens.
Yeah, agreed. So Let's talk about a few facts we know about her. She's obviously rooming with Ariana DeBose, who plays Maya. Mm-hmm. She's working at a company named Olympiad Entertainment, mm-hmm. where she apparently is crafting storylines. Mm-hmm. And there is some weird, creepy guy that's stalking her, mm-hmm. who believes that Christina's storylines are impacting things that happen in the real world. Mm-hmm. There's other clues about what's going on. When Dolores is walking to work, or Christina's walking to work, a bunch of bros pass by her, and they say, there's dialogue like that seems ADR, that where they say something like, "Is this your first time? This is way better than expected," or something along mm-hmm. those lines, right? Which opens up the possibility, is this entire version of New York City we're seeing some kind of park, or you know version of the park in and of itself? Like, is this another Westworld park that we're in, right?
Either that, or they just really like the High Line on the west side of Manhattan, which is a former railway line that's been turned into a park, which is where that scene takes place.
I will say it's a cool location to set something that looks kind of futuristic, right? Is like the architecture like that doesn't exist in most places in the United
States.
Yeah,
and it's a blend of, artificial and natural. You know, it's a park in something man-made or on something man-made that's elevated. But no, jokes aside, clearly the implication for us, the audience, is meant to be, wait a second, is New York City a park now? But I think, again, the purpose of this storyline is to make us, question the nature of, I was going to say Dolores, Christina's reality.
Yeah, yeah. So she goes to work, and then she's not appreciated for her sweet storylines. She's trying to write about a girl, trying to break out of her station in life. She goes out on a date with a pretty boring dude, and she talks about her job and how she writes NPCs, non-player characters. And the guy says, aren't those basically cannon fodder? And she reacts really poorly to it. And I'm like, am I watching Dolores respond to this or some complete other person respond to this? Right. Because Christina says, I'm not doing it from the players. I'm doing it for myself. And then the guy says, you sound depressed. There's tabs for that. They'll fix you right up. She says, what if I'm not broken? What if it's the world that needs fixing? Which is a line, by the way, that Dolores could have easily said, right? Mm-hmm. In her adventures. So then she goes to the bathroom and then, leaves, has a weird look in the mirror. She answers a call from the creepy dude, encounters creepy dude. And then finally the creepy dude unalives himself from the roof of the apartment next to her. She also sees like a version of the maze on the fire escape as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, like, what do you make of all this? What do you want to highlight from this whole sequence that you think is worth calling out?
First of all, I really wonder what the Westworld writers must have felt and the panic they felt when they watched Matrix Resurrections. Because, starting the new season with a version of their protagonist who doesn't seem to remember the past and or a war that seems to have led to nothing, and restarting her story as a video game designer where, she seems to have some kind of influence on the real world or something, and that these layers of reality, I think it's so funny that they seem to have come to the same storylines, separately from each other. But I'm here for it. I'd like to see where this goes. And one other thing I'd like to point out, just to augment my point about, the Christina storyline about being, sowing doubt and making us question. I don't think the name Maya is an accident, right? Regardless of whether she as a character, Ariana DeBose's character, regardless of whether she's playing this game or, is just along for the ride or just happens to be, Christina's roommate, the purpose of her character is to do things and say things that make us question reality. And in Buddhism and Hinduism, the concept of Maya refers to the illusory nature of reality. Something that you see a lot of Western films, you know, use, you know, movies like the original Matrix about how, you know, reality is the world pulled over your eyes. It's a similar concept. It can be interpreted as a similar concept. So a lot of Maya's interactions, the white and black shoes, where she says, pick a side, Christine. And then there were a couple of other things she says as well that I have in my notes, where she refers to the phone call that Christine gets and says, look, I'm sure it was nothing, which almost seems to evoke, doesn't look like anything to me from earlier seasons.
Yes.
And everything she says just sounds really weird. And I'm intrigued because I don't know what, if anything, she's up to. But I like that this whole storyline is kind of, it's kind of driving me nuts. It's making me paranoid.
I hope you're right, because I think if you're going to have Academy Award winning actress Ariana DeBose, you better give her something interesting to do. And so far, it's been kind of played out roommate tropes, you know, I hope it gets interesting. So I believe it will, but so far, I don't think she's adding too much. And I hope they, you know, they have basically a powerhouse at their disposal when it comes to acting. Right. And so I hope they make good use of her in the show. I want to quote some random lines that the guy who's calling her creepily says. Mm-hmm. He says things like, I need you to leave us alone. All these people do what you want them to do. I lost my job, my wife. I thought it was the tower. All these people do what you want them to do. The game, you wrote us into it. How these, so just kind of very vague things where it seems like Christina is exerting more of an influence over events than certainly than she has knowledge of, right? Mm-hmm. Here is one of the strongest theories that I read about what is going on here. So I don't know if you have a theory about what's actually going on here. Okay. Mm-hmm. But I think of all the plot lines that are happening in Westworld, the whether or not we like Christina is taking place contemporaneously with the other ones is a huge doubt to me. Like, I don't know if it's taking place in either the same time frame or the same reality as all the other time frames, all the other plot lines that we see in this episode. The theory that felt strongest to me is that we are seeing a version of Dolores in the Sublime / Data Storage Center, and that the like in the Data Storage Center, there's like all these hosts, NPCs or whatever, that are like being stored, all their memories and lives are being stored there, right? And maybe they're degrading over time, right? And so she needs to like write stories for them to kind of keep them stimulated so they don't like degrade too much. But that the stories have like gone out of her control somehow, right? Like she's writing individual stories for these like host memory, like host personas that are being stored in this server. And then like it's spiraling out of control. That feels to me like a very solid theory on what is happening. And so in that theory, then everything we're seeing of the Christina storyline is in a computer somewhere, basically, right? How does that theory strike you? And or do you have any alternative interpretations of what's going on?
I could see it being something that Westworld would do. I don't feel strongly about it in the sense of like, if you know, the next episode opens with that revelation, I wouldn't really have any strong reaction to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because mostly I'm interested in what's going on from an emotional standpoint.
Yeah.
The things that she is remembering and why.
Right. You're less interested in the plot machinations, although we will discuss those on this podcast.
But this is
kind of the challenge of Westworld is, you know, I read a bunch of reactions to this episode and many people were like, I don't know what I just watched. Like they don't even know what's going on a basic plot level. And so we don't know who Christina is. Like, is Christina a robot? Is she Dolores? Is she, you know, we don't know who she is. So it's hard for us to have a reaction to that character's emotional journey unless we know what is actually going on in the base reality of the show, right?
That's a great point.
And so it's tough, but we are going to try to figure out what the base reality is.
Yeah.
And I think the idea that she's kind of architecting the lives of the hosts or the stories of the hosts that are being stored is a solid theory.
Absolutely.
Could be completely wrong. Could be completely wrong, but like it's what I'm going with for now.
Yeah, and what I have to wonder is, you know, whether this is her body, her consciousness, whatever it is, who is repurposing her, if someone is repurposing her at all? Because, you know, it seems likely that the people who were once in charge of things are still in some way in charge of things. You know, what is her role? Why has she been turned into a storyteller? And this is where, you know, a lot more of the Matrix Resurrections comparisons come in. But that's something I'll try and leave aside because, you know, it's probably just down to coincidence. But something that the recapper at Vulture actually pointed out, which was incredibly interesting, and something that I missed, was that the character, the person who's calling her and claiming to be, you know, influenced by her story, or perhaps even, you know, something that she has created in some way, this, you know, paranoid person who's stalking her, his name is Peter. Peter is also the name of Dolores's father in the park. So that made me wonder, you know, is some part of this character's memory, you know, is it Dolores' subconscious in some way coming out in the form of art, in the form of stories? Because even if you see the story that she visualizes, by the way, when she sits down to write those, you know, games and NPCs, I love the way it's visualized. I love that you see it form in front of her. And
well, also, Siddhanth, like we have entered an era recently where DALL-E, right? The AI is like people are throwing lots of like paintings and images through DALL-E. And it reminded me so strongly of the kind of image and level of detail that we saw in that image. Like she can speak it and it can come to life. I'm like, this is like freaking future DALL-E that we're watching right now. And it's incredible how close the resemblance is between the images that she was speaking into existence and the stuff we've seen on Twitter and so on that come from DALL-E. So, anyway,
I didn't even think of that. That's a fantastic point. But yeah, what I was saying was, you know, she seems to keep going back to the well of the story of like this girl who's searching for something and her father, which is what we know of Dolores's early story before she became self-aware in the park.
It's usually not a coincidence when two characters have the same name in a TV show, right? Because they could have easily given another name to Peter guy. So why would they give them the same name unless there was some meaning to it? Maybe it's a coincidence, but I think it's unlikely, you know? Another theory that I've seen floated around that is also like here's the thing about these theories, Siddhanth, is none of them are like great at explaining everything.
No.
Right? so because even in a scenario where Dolores is writing the narratives for all these people, why would she be named Christina and not be aware that she's doing it? That doesn't make any sense, right?
Yeah.
Here's another theory is what if Christina is like the actual real life woman that Dolores, the robot, was based off of, right? Like, because presumably, you know, maybe they based Dolores in the original Westworld off of a real life person who like signed away their image rights to, you know, be used as a robot. And so maybe like the Christina storyline is taking place like decades before any of the events of like Westworld season one or whatever, right?
Yeah,
that's possible, but then it doesn't explain why she seems to be able to control everyone with her storytelling. Like, is that, you know, like,
yeah.
So it's like none of the theories I've seen like account for everything.
That's true.
But there, it's kind of interesting to think about. And it's kind of fun to kind of like speculate on like what it's actually going to be, you know, like who knows? But yeah, so there's a bunch of different theories about like what is actually going on here with Christina.
Yeah, the one about Christina being, you know, something in the past of the show, because it would make sense in this, you know, closing the loop kind of way that if this person, you know, feels the things that she does, would she not then logistically, you know, create the story of Dolores that we see in Westworld? And I think, you know, whether that turns out to be the case or not, it does form this really interesting loop of, you know, stories influencing themselves in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, there is one major thing that complicates any of those interpretations, which is that at the end of the episode, she speaks plaintively about wanting to create a story with a happy ending. And, you know, as she's narrating, we see it voice over it on other plot lines. And it's like, I wonder if she's talking about all of these stories in this season. And then James frickin' Marsden appears, man. James Marsden playing maybe Teddy, but Marsden was, I think, completely absent from season 3 of Westworld, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Because presumably he had killed himself in season 2. So This is the second character that we thought was completely dead coming back in season four of Westworld. You know, any speculation we have about what he's doing here would be completely wild. That said, I'm going to ask if you have any thoughts on Marsden reappearing.
I was delighted. Just my gut reaction was pure delight, especially in the context in which he appears. But beyond that, I think it's whatever it is, it's going to probably tie into us figuring out or learning what Christina's whole deal is as it pertains to Dolores. Because who is Christina in the context of Dolores? Who is this person in the context of Teddy? Is it the Teddy we've seen? Is it his body? Is it his mind in a new body? We have no idea at this point, right, other than the fact that there seems to be some kind of connection between them, an almost Romeo and Juliet-esque connection with him looking at her in the balcony. Who knows? Maybe what we're seeing is a video game. Because when she delivers that voiceover, the instrumental that plays is of the song Video Games. Lana Del Rey. And of course, the title is very literal, but it is also a song about longing and about memories, which makes it perfect for this scene where not Dolores, Christina, is, you know, longing for something more. She's searching for something, but also the question of her memories and, you know, Teddy's memories is always on our minds. Like, because this show has always been about memory since the beginning, you know? And so are we going to see a story of the ways memory manifests through art, through stories? I don't know. I'm really curious to find out.
Yeah, same.
So that's basically the episode and all the events that happened in the episode. But Siddhanth, as fun as it was to talk about everything that happened in the episode, there's also a bunch of stuff the episode didn't cover that we should discuss, right?
Is Stubbs in the tub? Is Stubbs in the tub?
What is going on with Bernard?
Yeah.
Where is going? And Bernard, you know, trying to care about him too. But yes, what is going on with Stubbs? Is he in the tub? What's going on with Bernard? I don't think we see Charloris.
No.
We don't see the, you know, Charloris with the burned arm, but I think we're going to later this season is my guess, right?
Mm-hmm.
And somebody also brought up, you know, I read somewhere that, like, remember last season of Westworld, there was a Dolores mind pearl in the body of Lawrence played by Clifton Collins Jr.?
Mm-hmm.
Is that mind pearl person still at large, right? Like they could still be around, right?
You know, for the 15 seconds of screen time that Loloris, what do we call him? I don't know.
Loloris.
Seconds of screen time that he got, I don't necessarily know that he's a priority.
but
he could be out there.
The point being that there was a Dolores mind pearl out there in the wild.
Yeah.
Right? And then, like, who knows how that may or may not mix things up this season, you know?
Yeah, like we said in the intro episode, you know, he's just vibing somewhere.
He's just vibing. He's just vibes. He's just been chilling for the last 7 years, basically.
He's Banksy.
Since the robot revolution. So
he's the new Banksy.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I think that's basically it. I am eager to see what happens with Charloris. I'm eager to find out more about what's going on with the flies. I'm eager to find out more about what is going on with Bernard and Stubbs. And hopefully we'll get some more answers to that this next week. But either way, I think we both agree, super strong episode, super strong opening, answers a bunch of questions, leaves open a bunch more, bold swings, bold decisions. Any closing thoughts, Siddhanth, on season 4, episode 1 of Westworld?
I love the way it ends, and I want this feeling to last forever. I know it won't, but I want it to last forever.
Thank you so much for listening. Thanks to all my patrons at patreon.com/DaveChen for making this podcast possible. Head on over to patreon.com/DaveChen, sign up for cool stuff, and support shows like this one. We'll be back next week with another recap of Westworld.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.